We're trying to make you fear.
Fear. Fear. The only thing fear. To fear is fear itself.
Is fear itself. Who said it?
John F. Kennedy.
So wise, good sir.
Welcome to Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. I'm Maury Fontanez.
And I'm Melissa Grushka.
And today we're going to talk about fear and the balance of fear and hope. Bean, ready to do it?
Always.
Hey, Signal listeners, before we get into this week's episode, I have something personal to share that I wanted to take a minute and just talk to you about. For those of you that have been listening to our podcast, you know that I have written a book, and I am so, so, so excited to share that this book is finally available for pre-sale on Amazon and Target.com and several other places. My book is called Higher Self, Reclaiming the Power of Your Intuition. And it is all of my coaching methodology, but also very much a personal memoir about my own life and how I realized that I had the intuitive gifts that I had and all of the highs and lows that I've navigated that have really allowed me to create the method that's been so life-changing for so many people. And this has been truly a labor of love for the past 2 years, and the book is finally available for pre-order. If you can take just a minute and visit any of the links that we are going to put in the show notes to put in your pre-order, it helps this book so much when it finally comes out in March. It makes the publishers feel so good about how much people want to hear this message, which allows us to print even more copies and distributors to be even more excited to carry the book. So truly, your pre-orders make all the difference. Again, those links will be in the show notes. And thank you so much for your support. On with the show. What's going on, Bean?
Not much. What's up?
How are you this week, my friend?
How are you?
You're great because you're headed to
Santa Barbara. That's my delight, as I booked my ticket to come to Santa Barbara. Would you welcome me with open arms?
Absolutely. I'm so excited. You actually, by the time this show airs, I think we'll be arriving tomorrow.
I will. Oh, that will
be so we're very excited.
I know. Yay.
You know what? I'm really proud of us. We went from really not seeing each other in person to, I think it's going to be four times.
Wait, year. How? Four? Oh, you were here.
You came in the spring. I came there in May. You're coming back in September, and I'm thinking of coming there for a minute in November.
What?
We'll talk about it later.
Oh my God! You can't just spring that on me and not tell me, and then tell me.
And then tell you like this.
And expect me not to be excited and want to know about it. But you can tell me later. Very exciting.
I'm so excited. And you're coming here for a retreat that you're going to be a participant at and I'm teaching at. So this is next level beanship.
This is full gratitude on my end. This is like the ultimate level of I cannot believe I'm about to enter this retreat in a few short weeks.
You know what I can't wait for is for you to come back after the retreat and share with all of us how it was for you. This is your first, like, you don't take a lot of time for yourself. You're so dedicated to being there for the kids that you are taking almost a week to come to this retreat that's about self-reflection, about astrology, about intuition, about understanding yourself and growing and, like, spending all this time being introspective. I cannot wait to hear what your experience is like. So will you come back and tell us about it?
Obviously. And this is actually a great shout to our last episode. If you listen to our fall equinox episode where we were talking about it's a great time to get ready to do some introspective work.
Yeah.
So this is like a perfect foray into me getting ready. And it's like all these powerful, badass women. I'm just super excited for this opportunity and so much gratitude.
I'm really excited too. I'm going to leave it at that's my delight too, is that you're showing up tomorrow and that we're going to go off to Ojai and we're going to just
do our thing,
become better versions of ourselves.
I've also never seen you like actually work.
Teach a workshop.
Yeah. Like I always experience you on my own because I've been experiencing you, but I've never seen you like in all your glory. I feel like I might combust.
Oh my goodness.
And it'll just be like sparkles when I combust. It'll be like glitter.
You're just going to sit there with your mouth open and I'll be like, Beans, do you want to contribute?
When you're done, I'm going to be like, everyone will be quiet and introspective and I'm going to stand up screaming, clapping, standing ovation. Woo, woo, woo. Arsenio
Hall. My favorite thing ever when we are around each other, where like I'll say something that is literally like not even that insightful. It's like I could say the dumbest thing and she'll start clapping and turn to anyone who's around and be like, did you just hear that? You owe us $200. $200 for that moment of insight from
me. Do. Everything you say is mind-blowing. They do. I'm sorry. I can't wait to see people's faces watching you do your thing. Like,
oh my
what?
God. Okay. Now you're overselling
I'm gonna
it.
Be everyone- like, yeah. I'm going to be like, I know, right? She's my
They're
best
gonna be
friend.
Like, no, we don't get it, but okay. May everyone have a best friend like me, and I'm telling you, man. Well, on that happy note,
let's talk about some scary shit, shall we?
Jesus. No, you know, really think we both, you know, we talk about this podcast and what we want to contribute to the conversation. Yeah. Because we really want you listeners to use this time to get still and figure your own inner dialogue, your own inner world out. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
And so when we were talking about, okay, well, what's going to be coming up for people right now? We landed on fear because we are experiencing a lot of fear here in the United States. With the elections coming up, there's a lot of angst happening this fall. There's a lot of fear mongering being utilized to, you know, gain power and control. Fear is just really predominant right now. And so we wanted to take a second to put fear under a microscope instead of being fearful of fear. We're just going to go into the cave and look at fear. What is it? Why does it have such a hold of over us? And what is the other side of the coin, which is hope? So we're going to end this episode on a really beautiful, light note and talk deeply about hope and how we can cultivate hope so that we can become more resilient around the fear that's natural as humans, but the fear that we're also collectively experiencing as a society right now.
Shout out to our resilience episode.
Shout out to
a few weeks ago. Yeah. That was really well said. We went from a really like joking and laughing about glitter combustion to you saying that. And I got really quiet and I was like agreeing and nodding. It is a very heavy and scary time right now, myself included. It's been for months. It's been for years.
For years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that, you know, when I talk to my kids, it's so interesting how fear has become so commonplace for this generation.
Oh, really?
Almost like normalized.
Heartbreaking.
You know, there was just a school shooting recently. And I, at dinner time, was like, I want to talk to you guys about this. I hate to bring us down, but, you know, we need to talk about it. And I want you guys to know that the fact that it's normalized, that you guys hear about these things. This is the 45th shooting this year, school shooting, that it's so normalized.
School shooting this year?
45th high school shoot or school shooting in 2024.
Really?
Yeah.
That's insane. 45? That's insane.
And you're not even hearing about them that much.
No, that's why
and
I'm
I
shocked.
Think that it sounds like there's not, you know, if there's massive casualties, you hear about them more. But the point is that what I was saying to the kids is like, it's okay to feel whatever you feel when you hear this news because it's real. And the minute I said it, they both got teary-eyed. Like we had talked about it so casually. And once I was like, it's scary, you know, they were able to just have a minute and be like, yeah, I'm scared to go to school sometimes, which is insane. So we want you guys to take this time that you're listening to just get comfortable with the fears you're feeling rather than run away from them. Because when you do, then they can start to dissipate and we can begin to look at where's the light that can come in. So we're going to start by just telling you my definition of fear.
Okay.
I define fear as practicing future negative experiences that aren't likely to happen.
Oh, what about if it is likely to happen? Fear, can't fear be anything?
Fear can be anything. And actually, there's some philosophers that are really fascinating who have talked about fear over the ages that do a really excellent job of separating fear from angst and anxiety. So we'll get to that in a minute. But let's just start with, you know, defining fear. So that's my definition of fear. In a psychological sense, fear is just this basic emotional response that we have to a perceived threat or danger. And it's a really instinctive reaction that prepares, literally prepares the body for fight or flight. So that is the psychological and physiological definition of fear, is a response that allows our survival to happen. Philosophy has looked at fear as this anticipation of future harm, similar to the way that I talk about it, but also this dread of the unknown. Philosophers have talked over the ages a lot about how us humans existing in an experience where we can't possibly know what's going to happen tomorrow carries with it this natural sense of fear, because the unknown is both exhilarating and terrifying. And I think that that's where it's interesting to go in and dissect the difference between fear and anxiety or angst. So I looked into that. You know, who has talked about this? What is the definition of anxiety or fear, and how are they different? I get that question a lot. I don't know if you feel like you separate the two, or if fear and anxiety live in the same bucket for you.
I feel like because of my fear, I become anxious.
Right.
I feel like they're intertwined.
Yeah, totally. And that's how I feel. I feel like anxiety for me is fear built up over time, constantly replaying itself in a way that is unable to stop. But the philosopher Jean-Paul Sartre, I'm not going to say it right, Sartre, French, sorry, French people. In the early 1900s, talked a lot about existential anxiety and fear. And, you know, what he talked about is that there's a distinction. Fear is a response to a specific identifiable danger in his philosophy.
Right.
Anxiety is a more abstract existential form of dread. And he, you know, argues that anxiety arises from the realization that we have this radical freedom as humans, right? Like, we literally can do most anything as humans. And with that comes this responsibility around our choices. And so he says that humans are condemned to be free, meaning that we are constantly faced with choices, and that the weight of that responsibility, the weight of those choices, is what leads to this existential dread or anguish that leads to anxiety. And fear, in his view, is more concrete and tied to specific dangers. Anxiety reflects a deeper uncertainty about existence itself, and this responsibility that we have around our choices, which I thought was a really fascinating way.
And I think I'm more anxious than I am fearful now that I hear it that way.
It's like, am I going to do the right thing? Am I going to pick the right choice? Right. If I go this way, what's going to happen versus the sliding door effect of going that way?
Right.
And that we humans live in that anguish.
I do.
A lot, which was really enlightening for me.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, totally. I do think with specific current topics, specifically in the United States with the upcoming election, it is fear. That for me is fear. Totally. Whereas like my general way of being is anxiety.
Well, that would make sense because it's a worry about a specific outcome.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. There's another philosopher that talks about this too. His name is Martin Heidegger in the late 1800s. And basically, I'll quickly go into this. He talks about the difference between fear and anxiety, fear being directed, again, to a specific object or situation, a tangible threat in the world. For example, fearing a storm or a predator, or, you know, my fear of sharks. There's that bird. There's a bird friend that likes to come join our podcast.
Oh,
and sometimes
they
say, go away, and it does, and it just did it.
Maybe he's sharing about his own fear and anxiety.
Yeah, he has some stuff to say.
Sorry,
anyway,
buddy.
In contrast to that fear, according to Heidegger, angst is not directed toward any particular thing, but is more a profound sense of unease about existence itself. Like angst that, you know, we as humans have this life that has this like finality to it, eventually. Yeah. And fearing that finality is a big part of our human existence, fearing what we're going to do in between now and then, and again, whether we're going to make the right choices. So again, these philosophers really look at anxiety as this existential threat that we worry about, whereas fear is a specific worry about a specific outcome, which I thought was an interesting distinction when you're thinking about anxiety versus fear.
Totally. Yeah. Love that.
And, you know, we can't, you know, I do these workshops around fear, and there's always inevitably a person who will raise their hand and be like, well, isn't fear necessary for our survival? And I think it's a really important question.
I'd like to answer. Is it yes?
Yeah, I think that fear as an adaptive response from an evolutionary perspective is the reason that we have survived.
Correct.
Right? Like knowing that we need to be looking over our shoulders for predators, that we need to be aware of climate change right now and make sure that the planet doesn't explode by the time our great grandkids can take over. Those are things, those fears drive and motivate our behavior. And I actually had a thought about that. Like right now, fear, the social and political fear that's happening in our country and in other countries that you're seeing, is driving a lot of social progressive action. It's driving, I am so sorry. Is that?
I don't mind the bird joining us. I hope it's not disturbing for listeners, but I don't mind him much.
Can I just say something?
Yeah.
It is a blue jay. It is the same blue jay that is at the top of the wire outside of my office and then flew over just now and sat outside the side of my office.
The meaning of a blue jay right now.
Okay, we need to know.
Blue jays relate to everything from strength to confidence to communication, depending on which context you see them in. They have a reputation of being loud, aggressive, and mean. Ooh, however, wait. Certain cultures see them as lucky or a symbol of good things to come.
Okay, Mr. Blue Jay.
Okay, bring it on, Mr. Blue Jay.
Go ahead. You can join us.
Get it, Blue Jay?
Sorry, guys. So back to the point, to this idea of like fear being a productive energy in evolution, I also see it showing up as a productive energy in social change right now. Because of the things that we're fearing might happen to us, you're seeing more activism, you're seeing more engagement in politics and social issues and in community issues because of this fear. So yeah, there is, I think, an evolutionary benefit, obviously, to fear. However, because we're so controlled by fear, it has gone from helpful to truly dangerous. And what we're seeing now is that it's being utilized to cause people to see each other as dangers and threats and to create divisiveness and hatred in our world. And that is devastating.
Even from a physical standpoint, to be so consistently living in fear and our systems, in our nervous systems, living in that constant state, which is not natural, is really unhealthy for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely.
Woof.
Woof. So let's talk a little bit about fear and how it's being utilized right now, because I think it's really important for us to be aware. You know, like when you're having a very vulnerable personal emotion and that emotion is being utilized to control your thoughts and your behavior, it's important to have the awareness that that's happening so that you can be in choice around whether you're going to believe the messages that are stoking your fear or you're going to see them for what they are, which is trying to stoke your fear to get you to do or believe or say something. And this, again, is not new. Actually, Thomas Hobbes, who is the founding father of modern political philosophy, he was an English philosopher in the 1600s, literally talked about fear as the foundation of a society. He talked about fear being a fundamental aspect of human nature that plays a critical role in the creation of social order. That like we, because in our nature, have this sense of fear, we're driven by this fear of violence, insecurity, death, that this fear leads individuals to seek peace by forming societies and consenting to a sovereign power to ensure their security. That's so really, like, yeah, from the beginning of the formation of governments, even obviously before the 1500s when Thomas Hobbes talks about this, it's a really clear view of how this natural emotion and instinct we have has led us to give up power to say, okay, because I fear this outcome, I'm going to trust you, leader, to govern me and keep me safe so that I can live a little bit more fearlessly because you have it under control. Now, what happens, according to Nishi, later in the 1800s, is fear is then used as a tool of control, right? Because we are now giving up power. We have this fear. Okay, well, then if you want power, you know how to utilize that fear to get what you want. So he believed that fear, especially the fear of suffering, of death, of judgment, is exploited by religions, particularly Christianity, in his view, but also governments to subdue people and keep them obedient. And he criticized a lot the manipulation of fear, that it's used by systems in power to suppress the will of the people, and that it really limits the potential of people to transcend their limitations and create their own reality and create their own values. So if you're able to control the masses through fear, then they will not create change. They will not look inward and look at their values and decide that they're going to live according to their truth versus the truth that is being created for them.
But at the same time, they were saying that creating these groups allows us to sort of lower our fear levels. We create these religious groups or these trust in the government so that we're not as scared, but at the same time, they're manipulating our fears.
Correct.
It's like we can't win. An interesting thing I read in an article that I was reading about fear was one of the reasons they believe that we as a society are more fearful in this moment in time is there's been, just speaking to your last point, people are relying less on religion and are starting to leave in great numbers. And for religion, specifically Christianity, the Bible was like a rule book of what's right, what's wrong. There was no question. This is how you get into heaven. This is why you go to hell. This is all of the things for you to know how to live your life, quote unquote, morally and ethically.
Right.
And when people are leaving that now, they're like, but now what? Like, what do I do now? Who am I now? How do I live meaningfully and kindly? And
well, I think that's when you always see this rise. This happened in the 70s too, of Eastern philosophies and religion and spirituality.
Yeah.
Right. Now we've talked about this a lot, you know, astrology and intuition and this work of connecting to the divine in a agnostic way that's about seeing yourself as divine and seeing yourself as having the ability to manifest the visions that you have. That's where the pendulum swings when you start to see that an organized system like religion is utilizing your fear to like create this judgmental God who's going to punish you for being the very human that God created to experience life. So I think that we're in that swing, and I think that what's really wild is, like, at least in this country, in the US, this country that was founded on separation of church and state, where we're headed when you listen to the rhetoric of the far right is back into looking at the Bible and wanting to, and it's actually said really openly. I feel like when we were young, it was like hidden and they did it, but they did it quietly.
What?
Trying to create a Christian nation.
Oh, yeah.
Where now it's really an open part of the rhetoric of like the right overt. That we are going to live Christian values, or that we need to go back to Christian values. Right. And to your point, if you look at that religion and many Western religions, by the way, Islam the same, which is, you know, where my family comes from, Judaism can have some of this, like of this, there's one law, there's one rule, there's one way, or you're going to be punished. If that's the way that we are looking at building our society, then it makes a lot of sense that fear is a part of that control mechanism,
right,
because
totally.
Religion has used it for so long. And now we're seeing our politicians do it on both sides.
Yeah.
On both sides. Because what I see when I look at these political ads on both sides is this person is to be feared. Now, I agree that a Trump presidency is terrifying.
Terrifying.
But fear is so motivating. as a call to action. You don't want this to happen, so you better vote, right? Right. And I think that the reason I wanted to talk about hope, which we'll get into, is like, that's also very motivating if you know how to talk about it in the right way. Why do we live in a society where we are so fear-based and fear-motivated that that is where we go? And to your point, then it creates all of these negative side effects in our systems as human beings to exist in fear.
And what I'm hearing from you, and also which justifies what I read as well, is that we are so, so overexposed to media now. I mean, you were saying when you see this commercial or you hear this ad about this president, and it invokes fear, and or it evokes fear and or hope or whatever it is that we are so inundated day in, day out by so much information in today's world that it can't help but create fear. And then once you are fearful of something, the media kind of harnesses that power and will target you with even more messages that put, you know, put gasoline on the fire of your fears.
Yes. And they'll show it to you over and over and over
and over. And then the algorithms are feeding it to you over and over and over again. And I also think another part of today's world is that I feel like so many of the current today's society fears are so like interwoven.
Yes.
Nothing feels separate.
Yeah, let's get into that.
Oh, okay. Like if one thing happens, the other thing happens. I mean, even back to politics, like, and you and I are feel strongly about climate change and taking control of that and hopefully reversing it in some way, or at least stopping the damage we've done. Right. And whereas there are people on the far right who don't even believe climate change is a real thing. So not only are you voting, in my opinion, voting for them and moving back towards this Christian society, which we attempted to separate, but you're also voting for what I believe is someone who's not going to help take care of the earth, which none of this matters if we have no planet to live on. That's just one example of things that are interconnected. I mean, it's a million things. Plus, another thing I was thinking about during all of this is that we've never been in a time like this where AI is advancing so rapidly. The media is advancing. Everything is advancing so rapidly that we don't have, there is no history for us to look at to say like, this is probably how things are going to unfold. We have no basis for it. It feels like it's like a wild card every day. Mm-hmm. Like what's coming next? Who has any idea? Who's inventing some next technology that could either destroy us or help us become the hugest superpower? I just feel like we never know what's coming 4 months down the line, a year down the line.
Yeah, but we have enough history in our back pocket to know when politicians are utilizing fear to convince us that there is an enemy because they don't look like us. Like, come on. How many times have we watched this movie? How many times are we going to relive this story of, yeah, I know you're afraid because you can't afford the meal on your table because, and talk about interrelated, right? Like climate change is causing major issues with crops, with weather events, right? What's happening there? Crop shortages are causing issues with food being affordable, which is causing people to not be able to feed their families the same way they did. So then now we're going to stoke this fear about, you know, or utilize your fear that you're living a harder lifestyle to say that it has to do with someone who doesn't look like you, that it has to do with immigrants crossing the border.
Right.
And to, you know, villainize immigrants as these terrible monsters and dehumanize people because people are already afraid because of the circumstances of their lives. That, I think, history has shown repeatedly systems of power, people in power, doing over and over again. And where does that lead us? It leads us to division, separation, war, you know, all kinds of terrible events. So I agree with what you're saying. Like, we've never had this level of technology, so we're not going to be able to predict what the technology does, but we can predict human behavior. And what technology is doing is just further enabling a very old story of human behavior, which is to leverage fear and hardship to create division amongst us. And this is where we have to wake up. we have to wake up and realize that we're being pit against each other so that we are distracted while systems of power continue to accumulate power. That's what's going on. It's not actually going to put food on your table.
That I agree with. I'm not saying I don't agree with that, but the level at which we are now divided because of this messaging is greater than I feel like it's ever been. And I don't feel like these politicians are the same politicians that were feeding us these stories in the 50s, in the 60s. It was all sort of a similar level of human. Now it's just like a...
Totally disagree.
It's come... Oh, really?
Trump... Are you talking about the civil rights movement?
Are we talking about... There has never been a politician like Trump, ever, who has spoken in the way that he has spoken, who has gotten the country violently riled up in the way that he has... made such a soapbox for all of these Nazis to get up there and spout their hate.
But here's the thing. Trump vocalizes things that other leaders did through policy, things that other leaders did behind closed doors.
That's correct.
Things that other leaders did by changing immigration laws. I mean, I will never forget as a Persian person watching George Bush stand up there and call Iran part of the axis of evil. Like, there has always been this form of divisiveness and dehumanizing human beings. You're 100%. Right. What Trump does is just he says it out loud. And I think that empowers people to, rather than honestly look at the fear they're feeling and deal with the fear, take all of that and project it at someone else who doesn't look like me.
Yes.
So that I can almost let off that steam. I can, by projecting that fear at someone else as hatred, then I don't have to actually feel the darkness, the terrifying feelings of the fear that exist within me. Trump absolutely empowers people to project it outward.
Fine. I'll give you that. And I can even get off of politics and say that fear then now is brought on a lot with social media. We were just talking about the algorithm feeding everybody, and now it's causing like a lot of social comparison and identity comparison, and people are like losing their minds. And it's also causing a lack of connection, which I think is at the root of a lot of this, is that as I'm getting older, I am realizing the value of community and togetherness, and that the social media is allowing us to feel like we're connected while we're not really connected.
Yeah.
So it's like filling that void, but it's very superficial.
And it's isolating us.
It's isolating us, which is causing greater divide and greater isolation. There's so much in today's world that is allowing for fear to like just explode.
Well, and you know, it really, I think you said this, but like, all right, bye.
Bye.
Do you have to live in fear is really the question that we're pondering in this episode. And I think that like you said this, fear has a lot of implications on our bodies and our systems and our minds and our energies. Like, let's just start with physical, right?
Okay.
Fear activates the sympathetic nervous system. Now, what does that mean? When it triggers the sympathetic nervous system, it stimulates the release of stress hormones like adrenaline and cortisol.
Right.
When you have high levels of adrenaline and cortisol, you have a higher heart rate. You have rapid breathing that happens because your lungs are taking in more oxygen. You have muscle tension. Why? Because when those cortisol and adrenaline hormones are released, your muscles tighten to prepare for movement. It also has been shown to slow digestion because blood is redirected away from the digestive system to the muscles. That's that knot in the stomach feeling, by the way. Did you know that?
I did not know that. Isn't that fascinating? That, but I was just thinking there's also this rise of paying much more attention to our gut microbiome and what's going on in our stomachs. I wonder if there's any correlation between that and people being so anxious and scared these days.
Yeah. But like, think about all of that happening inside of your physical system.
It's too much.
Like, this is what leads to increased rates of heart disease and cancer and all of these, like our systems are interconnected with our emotions. So letting fear have such control over our lives is literally resulting in a physiological reaction, then let alone a mental reaction. One thing I read is, you know, when you're in fear, your brain tends to focus intensely on the threat that you're worrying about.
Which is biological. That's smart. Right.
But that can cause tunnel vision, where other details in your life or in your contextual reality become secondary.
Yeah.
And that comes from the brain's amygdala, which is responsible for processing emotion. The amygdala becomes highly active and it's looking for the threat and the danger, which means you are losing your ability to be present in your life. I think that all the time when I'm worrying. I'm like, okay, but what is going on in your life right now? Oh,
where your feet
funny.
Are.
You can hear the kids laughing. Your husband just was really sweet and went and got you coffee this morning. Like those little things I completely lose sight of. And I think it's really interesting when you look at the science of it, that your brain is like, it's because I'm focusing on this threat to try to keep you safe.
Keep you safe. Right.
Right. Right. Totally. And then it, you know, the prefrontal cortex is involved in this fear response. It governs our rational thought and decision making. What happens, science has shown when studying the brain, that when you're in moments of fear, the prefrontal cortex becomes less active, which means your rational thinking is impaired. It impairs your judgment, your reasoning, your problem-solving abilities. It makes it difficult to think creatively or even logically about something. So it's changing the chemistry of your brain and your ability to see things differently. And as we know on this show, your perception becomes your reality. So when you are perceiving constant and consistent threat, then you are realizing that life in many ways.
I'm feeling overwhelmed now.
Sorry.
I was going to say, can we move it?
Can
to
we
some,
switch?
Can we do a new topic? No. Can we move into, unless you have some really more wonderful details to share.
Details to tell you about fear. I mean, I think the reason I wanted to focus on it is like, we got to know what's going on if we're going to let fear be in control. We have to understand all of the implications. And I'm not saying that it's easy, like that you're just going to listen to this episode and be like, okay, I choose not to be in fear. I promise you we're going to land this plane and give you some tools on how not to do it. But I do want us to all be aware of the toll fear is taking on us. And that, again, we're trained as a society to be fearful. So like it's this like endless loop of the training, the culture tells you to be fearful, then your body and your mind is freaking out, and then you're more fearful, and then it's being utilized against you. Like we are in a loop that I think I'm just attempting to interrupt by shining a very bright light on it.
We're but trying to make you fear fear.
Fear. Fear. The only thing fear to fear is fear itself.
Is fear itself. Who said it?
John F. Kennedy.
So wise, good sir.
Okay, what were you going to say? So stop telling you about all the cortisol and the...
No, now I feel like my heart is racing. I was saying that I think this is a great time, not only for our listeners, but also for my now stressed out self and body to land that plane and flip that coin over and talk to you about some great ways, because I know you're going to have some tools about shifting your mindset and how to become more present and get out of that tunnel vision. And I think like you said up top, we're going to, it's about hope. So tell
me. It's about hope.
Wise one.
It really is.
How to be more hopeful. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to introduce the antidote to fear.
Great.
Which is
I don't feel hopeful right now. I just want you to know that. That at this period in time in the world, I feel hopeful personally in my own life, but I don't feel hopeful about where society is heading. So I need that. Thank you.
You're not alone.
I know I'm not. That's why we're all so scared.
Hope really is the antidote. And my call to action for all of you is to nurture your relationship to hope. And that's what I really want to talk about, is how do you nurture this relationship to hope? Because it does create resilience. When you are in a state of conscious relationship to hope, you become more resilient. So I'm just going to like do the same thing I do with any concept, which is I just want to make sure that we have a definition of what hope is, right? So there's various definitions. There's psychological and philosophical definitions. I want to just explore them for a minute so that you can ground yourself in what hope means to you. And actually, Bean, what does it mean to you when you think of hope?
I hate when you catch me off guard and I don't have any good words lined up. What does hope mean? It feels like promise to me, like positive promise and delight ahead.
Beautiful.
Thanks.
Love that.
Thanks.
I really love that. So I have a few definitions. So psychologically, hope's defined as positive, a positive motivational state.
Yeah, Motivation.
It's based on an individual's ability to set goals, find pathways to achieve them, and then maintain this motivation towards attaining them.
Finding the path. That's a good one. Because when you are fearful and scared, it feels like you're at a wall, like you can't get past it or through it.
Yes, the path to achieve the goal. Philosophically, hope is commonly understood as an optimistic outlook on the future. You know, just being able to be in a mental state that focuses on the possibility of positive outcomes,
right,
even during negative events or in the face of uncertainty or adversity. Hope is a big theme in religion and spirituality because it's about belief in divine intervention, belief and faith that there is something greater that we are all connected to, that we come from, that we go back to, and trusting that because of that system, because of that higher power, that there is meaning, that there is purpose, and that we are able to have this trust in finding meaning in everything. And we're going to, this word meaning is really going to be important because we're going to talk about Viktor Frankl, who has been a profound voice in my own journey and TJ's journey. I'll talk about him in a minute, but he talks a lot about meaning and hope. In society and politics, and you're seeing this a little bit on in the US with the election on the Harris-Waltz campaign, where, you know, Democrats are really attempting to take back this energy of hope that Obama did such a phenomenal job with and won with. Yeah. But in social and political context, it's really defined as like this aspiration for societal change and progress. And it involves this belief that collective action can really lead to better social conditions, can lead to justice or peace. And this is the kind of hope that's linked to movements for social justice and reform over time, is that we believe that there is this better future for society and that we're going to come together to do it. And then lastly, the emotional definition of hope is just really having this positive emotional state that is about your desires coming to fruition and the anticipation of those desires coming to pass. So emotionally, hope really provides comfort and encouragement during difficult times that there is this future state where my desires will manifest and that things can feel better. See, don't you already feel like, didn't your sympathetic nervous system calm down?
I'd like to say that I was really thinking that when you were talking about religion, that's always been one of the things that I've admired about religion, is that it provides this sense of peace and hope.
Yeah.
I feel like for people.
And greater meaning.
And greater meaning, which I struggle with myself.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Well, let's talk about meaning. So I said I was going to talk about Viktor Frankl. His writing is so phenomenal. If you guys get a chance to read one of his works, Man's Search for Meaning, it is such an easy read. It is profound. You should definitely read it. He is an Austrian psychiatrist and Holocaust survivor. And he developed something called logotherapy, which is a form of psychotherapy that focuses on finding meaning in life, even in the most difficult circumstances. And his views on hope and meaning, basically, they really emphasize that even in the face of suffering, people can find meaning in those events by making choices about their attitude, their perspective, by focusing on future goals and taking responsibility for your life, even when you feel disempowered. So finding the small ways where you can take responsibility for the state that you're in. So for example, I am in a relationship that is toxic or emotionally abusive, right? It's really hard. I am not, by the way. I'm giving an example, but it is really easy in those situations to feel victimized and disempowered.
Yes.
Right?
Agreed.
You know, in Frankl's philosophy, and I really follow this philosophy, focusing on the smaller ways where you can take personal responsibility for that condition and how you are a part of it and what you need to heal, what limiting belief systems exist in you that tell you are worthless enough to be treated that way. Focusing on healing those things, focusing on that responsibility in self, can create this larger sense of meaning in life and this aspiration to heal that thing and to become the kind of person who feels dignified and empowered enough to not be in a relationship like that. So that's the example of, you know, personal responsibility in really difficult times or circumstances.
Can I just say that you learned that from Viktor Frankl, but that is truly one of my greatest takeaways from just being your friend is always, you have always tried to get me. I feel like I struggled with it more in my 20s than I do now. You have always gotten me to look at it from like, well, what can you do here? How can you help yourself here?
I really love hearing that because I want to make sure that I walk the walk of the things that matter to me. So like the fact that you're reflecting back that I can do that in moments of that I'm not conscious of it really matters because.
And that you've told me to do it.
Yeah, totally.
Always. Totally.
Thanks, Bean.
You've always been like, what's your takeaway? You've always said to me through things like, what's your takeaway from this? And that's what you're trying to get me to do is find the meaning, find the way to move forward with hope.
With hope. And you know what he believed, just to go back, because he really, I think, is such a foundational teacher for me around this. So you're just going to hear me go on and on about him. But he really believed that the primary driving force in humans is not necessarily just the pursuit of pleasure. Freud suggested, for example, that that's what it was.
Speak for yourself.
But it's the search for meaning. Yes. I really think it's true.
I agree. I do.
Right? I help people really focus on their purpose in our work. Yeah. That's what feels so transformative to people. So
and meaning is pleasurable.
Totally. It's like, why am I here? Yeah. Or why did this event occur?
Right.
Or, you know, for me, actually, I'm going to bring it back to what we've been talking about. When people ask me about our politics right now, I can find a ton of meaning in what's going on.
I am
very clear from a 1,000-foot perspective that we are being asked to look at things like how our fears are manipulated, like that it is so in our face that we finally get to confront it. And once we're aware of it, wow, do we all of a sudden change our relationship to fear? Do we change our relationship to the way that we're convinced to hate each other because we're divided? Like now that you have someone to your point, like Trump, just saying it out loud, well, guess what? You don't get to ignore it anymore, do you? Now we're having these conversations that are really important that we weren't having in the past. So I can find meaning in that circumstance, which does give me larger hope. Now, does it give me hope for November? No. But does it give me hope for humanity? Absolutely. Because in my view, and this is why I keep bringing up history on every episode, is like, if you look at our history as a species, we do keep learning and evolving through these kinds of massive social events and changes. So that's the meaning in that for me. I think that it's what's fascinating about Frankl is that, you know, a lot of this came from his experiences in Nazi concentration camps, where he is in these camps and thinking about hope and meaning. And what he observed in the concentration camps is that the people that were in the camps that were able to maintain a sense of purpose in their day-to-day in the camp.
Yeah.
And meaning in life had a better chance of surviving those horrific conditions than the people who didn't.
I believe it. It's a mentality. So, I always reference my grandmother and how amazing she is, but she is able to see the positive in a lot of negative moments.
Right. So it comes from this belief that like hope for him is that life has meaning no matter what circumstance you're in. And he quotes Nietzsche, which we talked about, saying this quote, "He who has a why to live can bear almost any how."
Wow. That's beautiful.
Which is so true, I think. So anyway, I think that, you know, when we think about transforming our relationship to fear, if we can put it in the context of hope, then what that looks like is, okay, what is the meaning of the circumstances I'm in right now? What am I learning from it? Or how is this contributing to a better outcome somehow, in some way? Finding meaning in circumstances that are difficult is the first thing that I really think. When you're feeling yourself trapped in like societal or political fear, looking for meaning is really, really important. And I really think that, you know, Frankl has a lot to teach us about that. But there's other ways to invite in hope when you're in this state of fear. And you guys who have listened to the podcast, I'm not going to bore you with this, but I've said it repeatedly. Like, we always have a fear self. There is always going to be a self that is trapped in past traumas and pains that is going to attempt to protect us from reliving those traumas and pains by by keeping us small, by keeping us in fear, by replaying that fear over and over again so that we never forget that we might get hurt.
Which or
that
is the just other your body's attempt to keep you safe, even though
your body's attempt, your little, your younger self's attempt, you know, your past experiences attempt. Now, the reason that that's not effective is because, like I said, it's having you practice future negative experiences that most likely aren't going to occur. So that is a strategy to protect you that's not going to allow you to thrive. And your relationship to fear can be just that, seeing it as an outdated strategy that came from a moment of pain in the past or came from a passed down ancestral trauma or a limiting belief system from family that is no longer serving you, because that level of protection isn't allowing you to rise up to your most dignified self, to speak up, to take action from a place of truth and integrity and clarity.
And that, to grow. That
it's not
and
serving
evolve.
You anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
It's stunting you. It's
right.
Stunting
so
your growth. Yeah.
I really advocate for our relationship with fear to be one of tenderness and like really looking at it, really being in dialogue with it rather than running away from it or feeling so uncomfortable with the way it's making us feel. And as we do that, I know you're going to ask me, what are some tangible takeaway tools that people can use as they're in this dialogue with fear to also cultivate hope? So I'm just going to beat you to it and give you some.
Please do.
Okay. All right. So I talked about finding meaning in whatever you can. The other is envisioning a better future state. Just really stopping your mind in that loop for a moment and saying, well, what do I desire and what might it look like if that came true? Right? You have just as much evidence. You have more evidence that it works out in your favor than you do that it doesn't, by the way. I challenge you listeners right now to stop and look back at the things you've wanted in life and how many of them came to pass. Maybe not the way you thought, maybe not as easily as you wanted, but always you have arrived at a better place. So that evidence gives you hopefully the fuel to imagine a future state, which to you just said is manifestation. It's envisioning this state and feeling it, feeling your feelings about it as though it's reality so that your energy can match it. Little other ways, setting achievable goals for yourself. Like really, if you're feeling in this state of fear, what are small things that you can set, little markers that you want to achieve so that when you achieve them, you can celebrate those wins?
Can you give one example for that? Like a actual
setting achievable goals for yourself?
Yeah. Like what's an achievable goal when you're feeling scared of whatever?
Well, it depends on what you're scared of.
Let's say you're scared of a job interview that's coming up.
Great.
What's one tangible?
Yeah. So if you're scared of a job interview that's coming up, you can set the goal of, all right, you know, for this week, what I'm going to focus on is finding what I'm going to wear that makes me feel really good about myself. And I'm going to find that thing. And when I feel good in that thing, I'm going to just feel the good feelings about it. Then I'm going to sit down and write out talking points that, and I'm going to review them and say them out loud to myself over and over again, right? Like little tiny things that you can achieve to take action against the fear. Fear likes to paralyze us into inaction.
It sure
does. Achievable goals motivate you into action, which is the antidote to that paralysis.
Can't stump you. Can't never stump you.
Gratitude, we've talked about repeatedly, but just finding moments of gratitude for the little things in your life. Like I talked about, wow, it was so nice that TJ made me coffee this morning. Like how cool that my husband takes care of me in that way. Even if I got really bad news about something else, right? Like it can balance those experiences. And then listen, limit your exposure to media, truly.
Yeah, so stop listening to political podcasts.
But it doesn't – political podcasts for me are a very nerdy thing don't fill me with fear.
Okay,
but if you notice, there's times sometimes, honestly, where I'll be scrolling through Instagram and I will have the thought, this is making you feel bad.
Yeah.
When you can notice that you're feeling bad – being exposed to media, just turn it off. Go outside.
Mom, do you hear that? My mother, Debbie, you hear that?
Debbie, turn it off.
The news, man, she needs a break.
Yes.
It's overload for her. She needs to cut it off. Love you, Mom.
Cut it off. And I'm not saying that means don't be informed, because the next thing I'm about to tell you is get involved.
Love.
If you are worried about something that's happening in society, in culture, in politics, get involved.
Love.
Action is the best antidote to that paralysis of fear. So find a way that you can get involved, small or large, and do something about the thing you're worried about or afraid of. And notice how empowered you feel when you take action. Don't let the fear voices convince you that you have to stay small and quiet and paralyzed. That is exactly how people who want to control us over fear, with fear, win.
Right.
They win by convincing us to be paralyzed by that fear. Do the opposite, and that will invite in hope.
Damn.
That's what I got, Bean.
Slow.
You feel better?
For that. I do feel better. And would you like me to do my takeaways?
It is time for Melissa's famous takeaways. Please.
Insert takeaway music here. It's going to be a deep, soulful takeaway. When we were brainstorming this episode, Maury originally said, let's do a fear and hope episode. We were talking about the state and she wanted to talk about hope. And I kept saying, because I am the more pessimistic of the two of us, I kept saying, no, I think we should really just talk about fear because it's so potent right now in the whole world. I feel like everybody across the board is feeling it for various reasons. Mm-hmm. So I kept being like, we just need to address that because that's what everyone is thinking and feeling. So let's just talk. And she kept being like, well, what about hope? Hope. And I was like, fine, let's put it in at the end as like the antidote to all the fear and everything. And even at the top of this episode, before we started filming, I said something about we're doing this episode on fear and you went and hope. And I said, yeah, but mostly fear. And my takeaway is that as always, you have opened my eyes to how critical it was to introduce the concept of hope into this episode, because it took it from being this really dark, heavy thing, and it illuminated a path like we were just talking about, which is actual hope, is that you allowed me to understand that in this feeling, with this feeling, I can feel it, but I can also feel other things. And it's the and, which I've talked about many times as one of my greatest lessons from you, is there can be an and. I can be fearful and I can work on these, introducing these ways in moving more towards hope, which is always something you have done for me throughout my entire friendship with you. And you did it again today in this podcast. And I feel like I learned and I feel like I grew. And I have so much gratitude that my job is to be beside you and taking in all of this glorious knowledge and then improving my own life. So thank you.
Wow.
In the beginning, when we started filming together, they were like, stop hyping Maury up so much. And I'm like, I can't help it.
We had feedback in the beginning that was like, Bean, calm it down.
I don't know what to say. You enhance and enrich
I don't know what to
life.
Say.
I
really, again, find people in your life to reflect your higher self back to you. That is the greatest gift that you can find. Bean, thank you. And thank you for always giving us such clear takeaways, guys. Our wish and hope for you is that you are able to wrangle that fear, to love on that fear self, but to introduce the light of hope into your lives, because there's a lot to be hopeful about. And we got each other. We have your backs, and we appreciate you having our backs by listening week after week. So thank you. And we'll be back again next week with another episode. See you then. Bye.
Bye.
Hi, hi. Guys, thank you so much for listening to us every week.
We love you.
We love you. We hope that we are
like,
helping
for real.
You. Yeah. No, really.
It's true.
We're not just saying it.
Yeah.
We hope that we're helping you see life differently, see your own growth journey differently, whatever it is you're taking away from us.
Yeah.
We have our favor to ask you, which is that you can really support this show by helping us grow our audience. The more people that listen, the more likely it is that we can continue to make this show. So if you can just take a minute right now, think about someone that you want to share this episode with, and please, please, please share this show. Also, leave us a review anywhere you're listening, on Apple or Spotify or anywhere else. That also helps us. So go ahead and review the show, and thank you for being such loyal listeners.
Show us some love.
This has been another episode of Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. This podcast is co-hosted and produced by myself, Maury Fontanez, and Melissa Bushka, and is edited by our sound editor, Josie Barak. Stay tuned next week for another episode.